Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to our show, transparency.help.com. My name is Evinda Leppins, and I am very, very glad to be back on the air with you today, this last Monday of January already. Can you imagine? Steve, how are you?
I'm good. My wife went out of town for the few days.
Now, wait a minute. That does not sound right. You're good because your wife went out of town. Okay, talk about transparency. Hello.
Well, I got a lot of things done. It would have been tough having her there all weekend because
yeah.
I was meeting. I had meetings. So I tell people, and maybe men, if you understand this, you know, my wife's been gone, so last night I Gailized the house.
What does that mean?
Well, her name's Gail, and I made sure it looked exactly as it did when she
Gail-ized
walked.
Oh, you Gailized it.
Yeah, Gailized it. I did all the laundry, ironed, did all the dishes, get the dishwasher, I mean, yeah, so.
So, and you know what's, I mean, speaking of transparency, I just want to say, you know, a couple years ago that would have, like, struck me kind of like, oh, man, what a bummer, I hope George doesn't ever think that, but you know what, it's okay. It's okay, because let's be honest, it's like I don't need to be in his hip pocket every single
sure.
second of the day,
yeah.
and he doesn't me, and we don't have to be the same.
Well,
we're
how do you appreciate
different.
Each other?
Right.
How do you learn to appreciate? You're there 24/7, you're on top of each other.
Go take a little mini vacation so I could Georgize the house. No, there we don't want to Georgize the house.
Well, I mean, Gailize it, because I'm a bachelor, right, so I just leave dishes in the sink, and, you know.
Don't make the bed.
Yeah, don't make the bed, exactly.
Yeah,
don't make the bed, but I made
yeah.
it this morning. So,
nice. Okay, mm-hmm. so she's home today?
She'll come home tonight.
So, and then there's those sweet homecomings. So
that's right.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Okay, so we left off last week. I actually left off with a challenge for myself. And I think the challenge went something along the lines where I was going to ask someone very close in my world if there were certain behaviors that are part of me, demonstrated by me, that are less than positive for you. And
go.
I will be honest and say I have not had the chance to do that. I did not make the chance to do that. I've had a very rough week, and I know for a fact, had I asked my significant other that question this week, he would have been all over it like white on rice, because my behavior was not the greatest, and yet he is working meekness in me through it all, because he loves me too much to leave me the way that I am. So, but I have gone through a couple of circumstances that required I don't know if any of you have seen on Facebook, you know, what is the one word that you want to work on this year? What is the one character? And mine, towards the end of the year, the Lord told me quite succinctly, he's been actually for a couple of years, but I've ignored it, is the word meekness, which is power and control, which is also a form of gentleness,
mm-hmm.
which for those of you who know me, I'm sure you're laughing right now, because I can often be like a bull in a china cabinet.
No
not,
way.
Yeah, not because I'm mean, but because I tend to be in a hurry and I'm tending to multitask too many things at one time. And so he is slowing me down in order to be able to help me just really, really practice meekness, and he has just not let up. He is relentless when we ask for something, especially a character. He's relentless in seeing to it that he does do that work in us
mm-hmm.
so that we can have that. And so I will tell you that there have been several situations this week that have definitely honed in on...
Given an opportunity.
And I have to tell you, I've actually had many victories. For as many situations I've had for meekness, I think I have failed only one test.
That's cool.
So I am definitely working on that. And, you know, we're always a work in progress. And if we can remember that it's just never over. And that might sound exhausting, and it can be if you dwell on that. But that's also hopeful.
Well, that kind of leads to the whole focus of today. We're going to talk about transform and what the word means. But it's my belief that I can't transform unless I'm in relationship to someone.
Mm-hmm.
What does that look like? Well, you know, I can tell myself I'm changing. You know, I can listen to a message and determine, you know, my New Year's resolution every day. And I don't even know that I'm resolving unless, especially if it's a character defect, something that's in my character and as part of my personality, if I can pray and pray and pray, But really, until I'm in process with someone, will I even know that it's changing?
Yeah.
And so those are opportunities for me to be more humbled, a little more on my knees, and instead of it happening on my own, actually to ask the person that you specialize giving this gift to often, that you would ask them how you come across and how you can change that. And to confess to these people, because it's tough. It's like our kids, when we yell at them, that's a character defect of the parent, but the kid thinks it's about them. They've done something wrong. They've done something to make you this upset. And so we need to confess to the other person that we have this reaction with, that, you know, it's not really you, it's me. And that's a lot of humility, because the word humble means to admit what's true.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an indictment. It's not a rejection. It's an admission, and once we admit that, then everybody around us can say, hey, if you want me to help you or remind you, and, you know, be careful who you give that ticket to, because they may misuse that ticket. But people that care for you and want to, and who knows that they see this in you a lot, and maybe they haven't had a chance to say that to you or brave enough to say that to you. So the issue of transform is critical, and that's why we have these, we're going to go into them today, these 8 roots that need transformation. But from these roots come these character defects, and some roots are a character defect, if you will, but unless we have people around us that can help us with that, we are not as conscious of them.
Well, and, you know, just as a root, oftentimes, I mean, if you think of like a big tree, yeah, sometimes you can see its roots on top of the ground.
Sure.
And it wreaks havoc, you know, and it makes the sidewalk rise up to meet you, and you trip over it because the roots are everywhere. It messes up plumbing, you know. It's just roots that are unattended to can really wreak havoc. Well, that's just kind of how it is with emotional woundedness, a weakness, meaning an unhealthy habit, unhealthy addiction, or a propensity or a tendency to worry about everything because you are not in control. Those, if you could just kind of look at those as roots, those are creating unhealthy behaviors. So that's why the significance, you know, what we can't see can really truly hurt us.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we get to see it, oftentimes it's like so in our face, and it's too painful to look at. So we're wanting to offer a safe place through our Blog Talk Radio show to be able to actually expose, if you will, the 8 different roots to any wound, weakness, or worry, anything that causes us trouble, anything that causes us to do things in a healthy manner, anything that messes up our, any type of behavior that messes with our relationships, there's roots to those. And so we want to get into those, but before we do, want to just also talk real quick about the various survival skills. You know,
symptoms.
Yeah, symptoms, if you will. They're survival skills, and life is not meant to be survived, but we believe because of our education and experience, meaning Steve's and myself, that life was meant to be embraced instead of avoided, so therefore abundantly lived. But the price has already been paid, and I don't want to get real theological on you. It's a hard concept to grasp. It's like, okay, if it's already been paid, then why do I have to go through all this crap?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a process, because many of the things that we're discussing actually affect the flesh. So because they affect the flesh, it's a process that has to be kind of revealed, peeled, and then healed.
Well, some of the things to manage the roots, and those are the common things that a lot of us focus on that are out there, alcoholism, mm-hmm. eating disorders, any kind of compulsive spending. We are overwhelmed with our looks, so mm-hmm. we have plastic surgeries. I mean, these are all management tools to not either deal with the roots or avoid those roots or feel better about those roots. You know, some of us don't feel good about what we may have just done.
Yeah.
Like, and so consequently then we do something self-nurturing or self-supporting, and those are the symptoms really of what's going on underneath. And that's why it's tough. We don't diminish any programs that are under the 12-step framework.
Mm-mm.
Because those help. And actually it's interesting that part of the 12 steps is doing a 4th step, And part of the fourth step is actually looking at some of the roots of the individual manifested by their behaviors of wounding other people, because, again, it's a moral inventory of how did I behave when I was under the influence of, or how did I wound other people when. And so the neat thing about that is they want you to confess that, and then they want you to make amends for those things. But how to take control of those things, how to recognize them, and what were they. And so that's sort of the focus of, instead of the usual recovery focus, which
well,
are these things.
And then, you know, I wanted to add to that list. I mean, that list that he just gave, you know, about the excessive
eating, spending,
and, you know, spending,
drugs,
and plastic surgery. There's, you know, prescribed medication, the use of illicit drugs, mind-altering substances. But what about social media? Social media has led us to a whole other world where everything is available at our fingertips. I mean, pornography is available at our fingertips. And so people suffer silently with this sickness. And it is a sickness. We've really learned where this, you know, is rooted in, what it's rooted in. And obviously it's a need that is not being met. And then, I mean, the list could literally go on and on, but, you know, the use of social media has opened up wide and made much easier the opportunity for extramarital affairs, correct?
Sure.
I mean, it's...
We want to understand.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I'm, you know, I don't mean to get, like, in your face and sound depressing and stuff. I'm just keeping it very real. It's, you know, social media, while it's an awesome thing, it's an amazing tool, has been used also as a weapon. Just as there is good, there is evil. And so, you know, we want to provide just like a safe place to actually talk about these different roots, the eight roots. But I also, before we get into them, want to talk about the common thread. The common thread in all of these survival skills, aka the symptoms, all the issues that we just talked about, is a conscious or unconscious awareness of unresolved emotional pain and confusion from old relational wounds. And I think it's important that we understand that I did say unconscious, because truth, as transcribed or translated in Hebrew, means an unveiled reality. So what this means is that we can be unconsciously aware of how we come across to others.
Sure.
But can we be unconsciously aware of something becoming a bad behavior or a bad, you know, like a habit? Do you know what I mean?
Well, it's tough when a lot of the habits you now... utilize were modeled to you.
Mm-hmm.
That was, your dad was drunk every night. Your use of abuse had, came from the abuse in the home you came from. And so all these things are, or you had friends, or you had a buddy who, and it's really a shame, you know, somebody had a movie that you shouldn't have been watching at your age, you know, and his dad had pornography under his bed, and all those things are not necessarily our fault. Because when we learn to survive and we manage our lives based on the terms we were given, we do what it takes to subdue our emotional pain. And the sadness is that what we thought was in our control now controls us.
And isn't it because we just don't want to feel pain, whatever it is. We are taught to, right? Wouldn't you say we're kind of taught to?
Well, I think when we have admissions of pain and we have admissions of these roots we're going to talk about, we think that's an admission of our non-value. We think that means that something's wrong with you. When a child is molested and they develop a dissociative disorder, God programmed into the mind to put those things out of your mind. That means something good was happening. A lot of times when you're in a bad situation of a home and you learn to use a drug or escape on social media, that's because you needed an escape.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually, what was working in you for your survival, not necessarily for your relational success. Now, when you leave home, you don't know how to flip that switch, because then you see the world through the eyes you left home with. And therefore, you use the tools you left home with, because the world's not a safe place. And so you learn not to trust. You learn not to believe people care. You learn to believe you are worthy of rejection. And so you kind of shrink your world down so you can manage it. Nonetheless, you're not happy. I mean, if some of these roots are a part of your world, you can't be happy.
Mm-mm.
And maybe you're not even conscious that happy matters, because you're just kind of surviving using these tools we talked about, these addictions, or you use the roots to manage your life.
So, and again, please understand that as we, you know, get further and further into this is no way a bashing of the parent segment.
Oh, no.
Because we have learned the reality of the truth, which is how we love or relate is directly linked to how we were loved. So if we take that a step further and kind of give our parents grace, then basically how they loved us was how they were loved. And so this is what we mean also by a generational cycle. And so it's not a blame the parent, but I'll tell you what, learning what I've learned has helped free me to forgive my my biological mom and and actually forgive my stepdad who did the molestation because he obviously was molested and abused. It doesn't excuse their behavior. It doesn't mean I agree with their behavior, but understanding it does give me permission to forgive. It truly does.
Well, if I look at these roots and allow myself to say, yes, that's true, then we are going to be softer towards ourselves as we admit them, and that makes it easier to be softer towards those that help perpetuate.
Yeah, and I just, I want to ask you a question while right before we get in, because we're going to go in and start talking about these eight roots. We're going to at least announce the first four, hopefully, today. But along the veins of an unconscious or conscious reality, okay, you described something to me years ago that kind of I thought was unique, and just that's how God is, you know, where he has built us with an inward internal mechanism that helps us to shut off or shut down, if you will. In other words, he doesn't allow us to remember all the bad all at once, and that is because why?
Well, he doesn't allow. I think the mind cannot allow itself to be overwhelmed. We have to function. We have to go to school the next morning if I was molested the night before. And so people have had to learn how to, their mind has to stay sane. And so we have, I'll use a word appropriate, loosely, acceptable is a better word, acceptable ways of managing those things, and who knows how they come out, but it won't be in a connection to remember being molested. It'll be in connection to something I'm thinking I'm more conscious of, so I act out, I'm mad, I take advantage, or I ultimately may molest someone myself. But I don't connect to it towards myself because there's certain things the mind can't accept where I'm looking at the protector and perpetrator in the same person. Yeah, I just can't do it. And so I am unconscious, if you will, and I might have shared, you know, when someone has been molested and they've worked their lives, worked unconsciously not to be aware, it takes a long time for that to be able to come to the surface to admit some things and admit what are tough. Okay, what do I do with that now? So God has created the mind to be self-guarding and self-protecting.
That's what it is. Okay.
And that's why I think it's Proverbs 4:23 that talks about guarding our heart, right? Guard your mind. And the mind automatically does that when it comes to deeper kinds of things, but we need to work at guarding our minds and not to be on the internet and not look at things that are images that are hard to get out of our mind. So we're actually exposing ourselves to things that are really tough to get past once they're in there.
Why do you think it takes so many years? Because, I mean, I could speak from experience. And as you know, I mean, I was in your office as your patient for at least 7 years. And I had actually gone to counseling before you for maybe, I don't know, 6 months. Didn't really last very long. But why do you suppose it takes so long? I mean, is it deeper the wound, the longer
well,
the time?
Well, that's a good question because it's about trusting. We, our trust is violated, so we learn to trust ourselves. And so what I believe is if love was at the root of the parent that molested me, automatically if I let you love me,
then that's going to happen.
You're going to hurt me. Those go together, and it's really an amazing kind of natural survival kind of response to a situation. And so I can't really, I can't. So I don't know how to let you close. And so as a therapist, and it's curious about, we're talking dissociative disordered kinds of people that checked out when their dads came into their bedroom, if you will, at a young age. And so it's interesting that the research on recovering the memories of that and recovering from the wounding of that starts, if you stay in the therapist office long enough, 4 to 5 years later. That in order to trust the therapist with that information, to trust your mind with that information, that you will let your mind become more conscious of what you have hidden it from all those years, it has to be in a therapist's office at least 4 to 5 years of time.
See, and I was with you seven.
Right.
Yeah, so, and I'm still in process.
But sure.
That just proves sure. He who began a new work will be faithful yeah. to complete it until the time
it's
of Christ.
It's amazing how we're wired when people yeah. think there's no God.
Yeah, exactly. So what we're going to do is we are going to start talking about the roots. And the first one is in its first order, so appropriately. But these eight roots that we are going to be getting into are linked to any emotional wound, any weakness, and or any worry. And what we're going to do is we're not going to get in depth over the next couple of sessions yet. We're just going to announce what the eight roots are, and we're going to give a dictionary definition. We're going to give an acronym or an acrostic, I should say, acrostic, and then we're also going to give maybe like a biblical fact about it.
Mm.
And then we're going to move into more in depth what each of these roots is like, and we'll be giving assessments on the air, and you can take those down and in the quiet of
qualify
your home,
certify yeah, yourself
and certify yourself and see the strength of your root. And basically they're just a few questions and you answer yes or no to them, and obviously the number of yeses determines the strength of your root, is how I had set the whole curriculum up. So The very first one we want to talk to you about today is the root of fear. And I think it's very appropriately placed as the very first root, because when we admit, when we look at fear in the face and just accept the fact that we do struggle with fear, well, by golly, then that begins the process to be able to work with the rest of the root.
Yeah, to even admit.
Yeah. Yeah.
That you're fearful.
So fear, now this is, the dictionary definition says, fear is to be afraid of something or someone, to expect or worry about something bad or unpleasant. And then on the flip side of that, there is the reverential fear. And we will get into breaking those down, and because there is a huge difference, trust me. But I'm going to give you a couple of the acrostic for fear, and you, many of you have heard this before. This is not one of mine, although the rest of them are. But fear, the acrostic is a false expectation appearing real. Remember, the definition is we're fearing something unpleasant. So fearing something unpleasant is the same thing as a expectation. So false expectation appearing real. That's the acrostic for fear. The a couple of facts, biblical and fun facts, if you will. The greatest fear in life that, survey says, that game, Family Feud. But if you were to take a poll, all the statistics, the greatest fear in life is to not belong or not be loved. Therefore, we can safely say with confidence that fear is driven by a need to be loved and accepted, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very good.
No matter what the situation is, it all comes down to the need to be loved and accepted. Now, here's an interesting fact about fear. It is in the Bible more than 500 times.
Wow.
And that's in all of its forms. The word fear alone is 404 times. So I know that I know that I know that our Father, our Heavenly Father, knew that we were going to struggle with this root, this monster, and He wanted us to be able to have a complete understanding about the bad part of fear and the good side of fear, because there is good fear.
Well, the acrostic, false expectations appearing real. There's foundational realities of our sanity and relational security, and one is that predictability creates stability. So I have anxiety. When I have anxiety, fear and anxiety go together, that I can't predict. I don't know what to predict relative to people loving me. My greatest fear is not to belong. So if I am myself, if I say what's on my mind, I need to be able to predict the outcome. Now, the shame of it is a child should never fear the outcome of their parents' love for them. The child should never fear that the consequence of any behavior that I ever exhibit is going to be the love of my parent. And yet, that's the feeling when parents yell at their children. The volume or the emotion is what creates the messaging of what's wrong with you. You left the lawnmower out. You hit your sister. What's wrong with you?
Mm-hmm.
And ideally, that's why using emotion during parenting is a tough thing, that we need to be as emotionless as possible and talk to our children about the choice they made and that the choice or the consequence is anything besides your love for them.
So in other words, there's a thing called like fearful parenting.
Well,
right?
fear-based parenting.
Fear-driven parenting.
Because ideally, before you exact or, I hate the word execute,
mm-hmm.
before you execute on your child, you should give your child a hug and say, I love you. I'm so glad you're my child. Sucks for your butt, but we're good.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the tension.
Meaning I'm going to spank you, but...
That's right.
But it's okay.
And that's why anything in a marriage, where you tell your husband, you know, honey, if you choose to do that, it's going to hurt me or whatever, but let me tell you what's not on my mind is not loving you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with what you're going to do. I'm not even sure that I'm okay with what you're going to do, but let me hug you and say, but I love you as my husband.
Well, and you know, it's funny that you bring that up, because I remember one time not too long ago telling George I was miserable in our marriage. And you might go, oh my God, you did not tell him that. And he looked at me and fear was written all over his face. And I said,
sure.
So what? So you're miserable too. It's okay. We got to work through it. And
as long as, which is really a shame, before we're married, we give each other all sorts of why I love you and why you're the greatest and latest. Now,
yeah.
After we're married, we forgot to tell him that.
Yeah.
So if you hadn't really assured him in any form that's as big as, and that's why if the lawnmower is left out, that's great. And you might even get some tension over telling your kid, you left the lawnmower out. But if we're going to use tension, which is generic in this example,
uh-huh.
you ought to be all over, oh, wow, man, the yard was great and it looked perfect and you mowed it great. And but in our marriages, we forget that. You know,
yeah.
I'm really miserable in this marriage versus when did you remember to tell him how great he was.
Absolutely.
And how unmiserable you uh-huh. are when you are. But we forget
and
to
I
do that.
No, I have to say, I honestly do. I do try to be his cheerleader.
Okay.
I do try and lift him up.
Well, then he should have the confidence
yeah.
that when you say I'm miserable today,
yeah.
but I'm not always miserable.
Yeah.
And so.
And that's a better way. I'm today, but not always miserable. But today
right.
I'm feeling excessively miserable. So,
so
yeah.
that's where fear comes from. It's an anxiety of the
yes.
unknown. It's
mm-hmm.
unpredictable. I don't know what you mean by what you said. I don't understand how you, what you are saying, why the feelings that are behind that. And that's what I think we get from birth. From our parents.
Mm-hmm.
They
not
didn't,
intentionally, but...
They don't come back and say, you know, I'm really sorry that I yelled at you. I was just upset about things that happened at work today. So the kid doesn't have to own the total mood the parent is in.
Right.
But kids don't understand any of that. They don't get anything that the parent has another life besides being their parent and that other things could happen to the parent that cause tension within them. And so the kid owns a lot of things that don't even belong to them.
Yeah.
And so that's where the fear comes in.
Well, and there's one more fact that goes along with the fear, the root of fear. And then, like I said, we'll go through the rest of these and then we'll begin going in depth, but giving you kind of a generic framework, if you will, so that we can color it all in and you'll be able to answer your assessments quite easily. But the last fact about fear is worry always accompanies fear, correct?
Worry accompanies fear. Well, of course, because why would you be afraid?
Mm-hmm.
Then you fill in a blank about, oh, no. What if? What about?
So would you say the worry is like another word for fear?
Well, they would be, as we're using the terms, they would probably be synonymous.
Synonymous, right?
Yes, because it's fear specific to the worry of
mm-hmm.
a relational connection.
Yeah.
Or being rejected
mm-hmm.
is the word that fits the greatest, that we all fear rejection.
Yeah, yeah, not being accepted and not being loved.
Right.
So, okay, so we have wrapped up our show today. That next week, please join us, and we will begin with root number two, just disclosing what the eight roots, we're disclosing the eight roots, and we'll get into number two next week again, just giving you the framework so that we can begin coloring it in the weeks to come. Thank you so much for joining us today. Have an amazing week.
Bye-bye.